Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do this!
And now, Chuck and Winkler. Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studio.
Listen up, people!
On Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler, we are served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I am Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman. Bucks win last night. More on that to come, including big flexing from Giannis after the game. We'll talk some Badger basketball with Ben Wergel this hour around 7:35. Do want to talk a little Packers here as Michael Lombardi with The Athletic. There was a piece on his article about the new coaching hires that really caught all of our attention when he said Matt LaFleur would not have been my first, my second, or third choice for this job. And Michael Lombardi with The Athletic has a lot of experience in this sort of thing. 30 years nearly in front offices with the NFL. 3 Super Bowl rings that he can put on his fingers at any given time. He joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Michael Lombardi, thank you for some time. How are you?
Hi, Mike.
I'm doing great. Thank you, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, appreciate you coming on. Yeah, you're very critical on the Packer hire. Let's go back to something you said, though, in the article. Even when they released the previous coach, Mike McCarthy, during the season, you thought the Bucks did him some wrong. Not the Bucks. The Packers did him.
See,
we've been talking so much Bucks on this show.
Yeah.
You want to talk hoops? Let's talk hoops. I mean, we could talk that too.
Yeah. We get criticized sometimes. We don't talk enough, even though we talk like 3 hours of it of our 4-hour show. But was the Packers did McCarthy wrong there by firing him during the season?
You know, I think, look, the guy, there's a street in Green Bay named after him. You know, whatever Packer fans think of Mike McCarthy, he did win a title for the team. One of the few Packer coaches with Holmgren and Lombardi to have won Super Bowls there. And so there is a certain amount of respect. And I get if you feel like you have to rush to get to the next coach or start the interview process. But to me, I thought it was a power trip by Mark Murphy. I think Mark Murphy, as from my viewpoint, watching Packer history, look, I grew up a Packer fan. My last name's Lombardi. I'm not related. But when I saw this guy on television who looked like somebody in my family's Sunday dinners, I'm like, okay, that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. And, you know, I've studied Packer history, and the president of the Packers has never been on a power trip until Mark Murphy became the president. It's always been seen but never heard. I mean, you can remember the stories of Coach Lombardi telling the Packer brass to stay out of the way. I'm running the football team, and they listened. And that's no longer the change. And I think this firing of Mike during the season let everybody know that Murphy was in charge, you know, that he's going to run the team. He's going to become the Al Davis of the team because he essentially is the owner of the team. He can do whatever he wants to do. And if there would have been anybody with compassion and understanding of history and what Mike did for the team, you would have waited to the end of the year to fire him and then go a part of it. So for me, I thought it was distasteful. I thought it was a power trip by Murphy. And I think Murphy has been on a power trip since the day he got in there when he splintered the position of general manager after Ted Thompson left and took the power away.
Mark Murphy has been somebody who is getting a lot of there's a lot of phone calls, Michael, that come in, and none of them are very positive about Mark Murphy because he has sort of made himself a face of this organization. I think the best example of that, even in the Matt LaFleur era, is when Matt LaFleur was introduced as the head coach. Every radio station in the state, every TV station in the state, okay, stop whatever they were doing to bring you this press conference because we want to hear from the first new Packers coach in 13 years. And Mark Murphy goes on for 15 minutes just spitballing, really, like he's a, you know, Catskills comedian for a while, drops a swear word. Everyone in their control rooms is like scrambling. The Packers ownership structure is so unique in the NFL that I think this time might be the first real time we think maybe this sort of ownership thing where there is no true owner and there's a guy in charge, maybe this is a problem because Mark Murphy really, it seems to us, like he's got unchecked power.
No, it's not unchecked power. He has it all. I mean, look, by the hiring of Matt LaFleur, look, If you want all the power and you want everybody to come towards you, then hire inexperienced people. Don't hire people who are going to challenge your authority or challenge your knowledge. So you hire inexperienced people to run the job. Look, I have nothing against Matt LaFleur, and maybe Matt LaFleur will prove me wrong in terms of becoming a head coach, but there's nothing based on the Tennessee Titan tape that you watched last year that you thought, wow, that's really creative. That's going to be unique in what they do. And, you know, Matt LaFleur is going to come in and handle this in a way to where you say, ooh, that's impressive. I think, you know, what often I think is missed in Green Bay, and I think the people of the great state of Wisconsin understand it more than perhaps Mark Murphy does, is there has to be a team that fits in the environment. And I don't see that team. I see a team that went indoors too much. I see a West Coast offense team that was needed perfect conditions and wanted to play in those elements, was 1-7 on the road. I thought this team was screaming for toughness. I thought this team was screaming for somebody who had experience, especially in the window of where Aaron Rodgers is in his career, somebody who understood what it takes to build a championship team. Too often we lose sight of what's good. We confuse it for what's great. And I think that that's really the issue we're talking about in Green Bay. And I thought that they missed it. Look, the Packers have a tough, unique situation because of the weather, because of where they play. You lose certain amounts of elements in December and January in terms of preparing your team and developing your team. You've got to have a condition to handle that. And I'm not sure that you can do that just by hiring an offensive coach. I'm not sure any offensive coach is always going to be able to do that. Now, look, Mike won a Super Bowl with Brett Favre, and certainly Mike won another Super Bowl with Mike Holmgren, and then Mike McCarthy won one with Aaron Rodgers. But I think this team was screaming for a tougher-minded team, and I don't think they addressed those issues.
Who would have been the guy then?
Well, I would have gone to experience. I mean, look, I think if you want to hire somebody of the Matt LaFleur, of, let's say you want the Sean McVay tree, go hire Mike Shanahan. Go hire Mike Shanahan and let Mike Shanahan come in for a couple of years and see what he can do with Aaron Rodgers and rebuild this defensive team and do that. You know, Don Martindale, the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, would have been my first choice because Baltimore would have, you know, he proved that he can coach defense. And I think sometimes we overlook this. You know, the two best coaches in the Super Bowl, fellas, were the two guys that qualify for senior citizen discounts at their local movie theater, Bill Belichick and Wade Phillips. Let's not confuse experience. I mean, there's a wonderful book by Chip Conley called Wisdom at Work where he talks about experience matters. It does. Experience matters. I mean, Matt LaFleur was 0-10 on third down against the Baltimore Ravens. That was Don Martindale's defense he went against. 0-10, couldn't convert a third down in the game, got shut out. And you hired the offensive coordinator and didn't interview the defensive coordinator? Something's wrong.
Talking with Michael Lombardi, you can read his work now, including the latest piece talking about the new head coaches in the league at The Athletic. Again, nearly 30 years of front office experience, 3 Super Bowl rings to his name. With this Matt LaFleur hiring, I do wonder how much of it is for Aaron Rodgers, but also the post-Aaron Rodgers career, because you are coaching 53 guys, even though Aaron Rodgers is like the guy I think that should have been driving the hire, at least get a coach in here that can get the most out of him. Do you look at Matt LaFleur as having a year or two to turn this around, or do you look at the Packers sort of, without telling anybody, rebuilding before our eyes?
Well, look, I will say this. If Matt LaFleur doesn't demonstrate quickly that he's the right guy, that he's going to be on Mark Murphy. Because one thing, when you take all the power and you move from the background to the front ground, you now have stuck your neck out there, and the power is going to be right in front of you. So you better be right with this hire. You don't get too many chances at this, so you better be right. And you say, you know, you got to coach all 53. Look, I couldn't agree more. But Matt LaFleur is not walking into Mike Pettine's meeting and telling him he wants to run more zone dogs and stop overloaded pressures to the left and automatic blitz coverages. I don't think Matt LaFleur is doing that. No chance. Matt LaFleur has enough experience to walk in there and do that. You know, he's never been a head coach before. He's not going to go in there and say, look, this is the way I want to set up the game plan. If you would spend a week, read my book, Gridiron Genius. Just read the chapter on the Baltimore Ravens and see what the greatest coach of all time does during the week of his games. And then you tell me who's really a head coach in the NFL. There's very few of them. Belichick knows everything that's going on. When they called that blitz in the Super Bowl that basically Jared Goff threw the interception, that was all predetermined by the call sheet, by what Belichick wanted to do. Brian Flores is a really good young defensive coach. He executed the plan that was put into place. But in terms of playing complementary football and running the game, you know, that comes from the head coach's chair. That's set up during the week in practice, and I just don't see it. We've entered into a subcontractor era in the NFL, and it's really taken away the authority of the head coach, because most people in most teams are like Mark Murphy. They want to see some of the power. So how do you get the power? How do you create the power? You subcontract everything out, and everybody has to report to you. It's a classic Al Davis maneuver. I know for a fact, because I've worked 10 years for Al Davis. Look, I understand it better than anybody. I lived it.
What McCarthy couldn't get out of these guys, and he got fired after the loss to Arizona. Just curious, what would you think Belichick would have got out of these guys this year if he was the coach of the team?
Well, it would have been a completely different team. Look, I think Belichick is so much. The day Bill Belichick walked into the Cleveland organization in 1991, he made it very clear that we played in Cleveland, Ohio, that we were going to have to win games in bad weather, because the games that matter the most in November, December, and January, we were going to have to dominate. Our team was going to have to be mentally and physically tough. So I think Belichick would have started with that pretense, and he would have had that condition, and they would have been more of a two-back team, just like they are in New England. I think the team that you see offensively in New England, with a great quarterback in Tom Brady, the ability to play both right and left-handed, to be able to run the football, they're one of the few teams in the NFL that run 21 personnel, two backs, one tight end, and utilize a fullback, and utilize their offensive line skill set and power the game. Look, they would have been completely different on defense. They would have been balanced on defense. There would have been more defensive line. There would have been less try to fill in the gaps. I see when I watch the Packers, I always think of Curly in the boat, Curly from the Three Stooges. You know, when Curly is in a rowboat with Moe and Larry, there's a hole springs up in the boat, and Curly has the bright idea that he's going to drill another hole to let the water from the one hole out, right?
Yeah.
So all they're doing is creating another problem by masking the first problem, and I see that with the Packer defense. That's always been the case, whether it's been because of injuries or because of lack of true personnel vernacular, in terms of Ted just wanted to always utilize the draft. Ted didn't care about other ways of improving the team. Now, I think Brian Gutekunst, I think you got to give him a chance. He's a young guy. You know, let him build the team and see what he does. He seems like he wants to explore all avenues of player personnel, which I think is vital to having success. But this team would have looked a lot different. It would have been tougher-minded. It would have been more balanced in terms of offense. And as great a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers is, they would have highlighted his skill set in terms of what he can do, and wouldn't have been as just generic as it was.
Michael Lombardi joining us, Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Despite all the problems, despite all the concerns, you look at, and it's just the Vegas odds, but the Packers are still like one of the top 8-10 teams, and you got to think that's because of Aaron Rodgers. For everything to go right, how likely is it that we are talking at least even NFC Championship for the Green Bay Packers? What needs to go right, and how likely is that for us to see that? Because it seems like you're not very confident that could happen.
Well, no, look, I think there's no greater player than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's the deodorant that's hit all the sins in Green Bay. I mean, let's be real honest here. I mean, you know, we saw when Aaron wasn't there what the record was. Okay, that's the true indication of your team. You know, as Al Davis used to say, why don't you just put that guy on my team? You know, put Aaron Rodgers on somebody else's team and tell me what they're going to do, right? But when he's not there, you got to evaluate your team. Look, I think it's a challenge. I mean, Chicago's much better. I'm not in love with Mitchell Trubisky as most Chicago Bear fans are. You know, I think that he's the equalizer in terms of as good as they are on defense and what they could be offensively. I think he'll give you a chance. I think the Minnesota Vikings, with Gary Kubiak now running the offense with Kevin Stefanski, I think they'll be much better. And I think the defense will be better. I think last year their defense wasn't anywhere near what Mike Zimmer needed and wanted from his defense. So I think those two teams, and I think Philadelphia is going to be better. The Rams are always going to be better. But the Rams have a unique situation, is they better make damn sure that Jared Goff is playing in Hollywood and not in Green Bay in the playoff time, because we know he doesn't play well in cold weather. So then it leads you to the Packers. That leads you to the Cowboys. I think there's a lot of good teams in the NFC. There's no walk in the park. They're going to have to play better defensively. They're going to need a really good offseason, and they're going to have to be able to handle that. And LaFleur's going to have to handle some of the challenges that come across his desk that he's never seen or heard before.
He's on Twitter at MLombardiNFL. You can find his book, Gridiron Genius, and you can also read his work at The Athletic. Michael, we appreciate it. Thanks for a few minutes, and we'll try to connect with you down the line.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Michael Lombardi joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Great Midwest Bank looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019. Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.
I think there's a lot of uncertainty among Packer fans you know, here in the state and, you know, everywhere that with this hire, because they don't know what they're going to get. And I think that press conference, not that you should read too much into it, may have something to do with it. The way the season ended for the Rams, that, you know, we got a coach off that tree, McVay, who, you know, was very unimpressive in his biggest moment. I'm still cutting him some slack for that, because I think there's better days ahead for McVay, although I think a little bit too much, Bart, I think people were on that McVay tree a little too much too soon.
Like with Cincinnati, Zach Taylor.
Yeah.
Their quarterback coach.
Now he's getting some, you know.
He's now the head coach with the Bengals.
Yeah, Zach, hey, there's a guy that, you know, we talked about in December. Should they hire the Zach Taylor and all that and all these assistants with the Rams off that tree? And now, you know, teams like the Packers and the Bengals are getting criticized for those hired.
No matter what Mark Murphy does, though, he has to move this franchise to Algeria or Australia or Iceland to really become the worst executive in the league, because that mantle's already been claimed. The worst move of the 2019 season has already happened. We'll tell you about that coming up. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. Find me at Winks Thinks. Chuck's at Chuck Freeman on Twitter. We are at 105.7 FM, The Fan, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can email us, the Wendy's email inbox, live at 105.7fmthefan.com. So the Bucks win last night, big win over the Pacers. We will get back to that around 7:48 or so. Up until then, we're going to talk some Badger hoops with Ben Wergel, as the Badgers sort of slipping a little bit, maybe destined for a first-round exit in that tournament. I'm assuming they get in, right? I'm still okay to assume the Wisconsin Badgers get in?
Oh, yeah, they're in.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they're in. I mean, both teams are in.
Okay.
It's just a matter of where they're going to get seated.
We'll talk about that coming up 7:35. Again, we will talk some Bucks in about 20, 25 minutes or so, but I got to complain about it. I hate John Elway. I don't think John Elway, as the Broncos trade for Joe Flacco, will be official come March. Fourth round pick. I think that John Elway is the worst executive that has ever been hired in NFL history. He's won three Super Bowls with that Broncos organization, two as a player, one as a front office guy. I don't think he deserves credit for any of them. Terrell Davis ran him to two Super Bowls, and then the defense that was built before he got there got him the third. Oh, he signed Peyton Manning. Okay, good for him. You know what he's done since then? He drafted Brock Osweiler in the second round. He drafted Trevor Siemian, tried to make him a starter. He traded up for Paxton Lynch at 26. He signed Case Keenum to an $18 million per deal. He traded for Joe Flacco, and he tried again to re-sign Brock Osweiler to a big money deal. He has been swinging and missing for years, and now you've got two quarterbacks. Yes, the Flacco deal is not guaranteed, but you did give up a fourth-round pick for him. Every move I see John Elway make, I can't. He's just trying to recreate the Peyton Manning thing, and it ain't going to work.
Yeah, no matter who he brings in there as a quarterback, I mean, look how many guys, you mentioned them all right there, that he has brought in, and none of them has worked, and he's traded draft picks and all that, and Joe Flacco is not going to be the answer here. I mean, there's a reason why Baltimore only traded him for a fourth round. I mean, when Flacco signed that contract in Baltimore, that huge contract, we all laughed at the beginning, because it's like, God, this guy's not worth that. This guy's not that good. Elway was a god in Denver. Okay, he's got restaurants and all that. I mean, you go to Denver and I hear a lot of John Elway. But man, that star has got to be fading in Denver with each and every one. There's not a person I heard from in the NFL yesterday who liked that move or liked the job that Elway is doing in Denver. But I mean, the guy is on such a pedestal there from, you know, his playing days. Would anybody else be fired at this point?
Is this a joke that I can say? Is this offensive that John Elway is the only person who the team that he played for modeled their logo after his face?
Yeah.
The joke is that John Elway looks like a horse.
Yeah.
Is that too risque for 2019?
Nothing worse than a woman who looks like a horse. There was a woman in my, there was a girl in my neighborhood, not to her face. Well, sometimes because we were mean kids, we called her horse face.
That's mean.
I know, but you're a kid though. 11 years old, you know? And yeah, she looked like a horse. And a buddy of mine was going out with her. I was like, oof. Horse, she looked, really, she looked one of the ugliest women you've ever seen.
There's a lot of women that look like mice.
And as a woman today, from a girl to a woman, she still looks like a horse.
Would you rather date a girl that looks like a horse or like a mouse?
How does a girl look like a mouse?
Like a little tiny mouse face and little tiny ears, little tiny beady eyes.
Okay, no, no. How about the girl with the huge forehead who throws her hair back and makes that forehead looks even bigger? Like I want to play ping pong against it.
Like you, they call that a five head.
A five head, yes. Yes, a five head. Wow. Enhance that forehead a little more. Ladies, don't be enhancing that forehead by throwing that hair back.
Again, we are two of the ugliest looking dudes you'll ever find.
But hey, that doesn't prevent us to comment on other people, including John Elway's looks.
It actually gives us more credence because we are ugly, so we know what ugly looks like. So that we're more qualified to talk about ugly people. Look, a lot of people look like animals, okay? And John Elway looks like a horse.
He does.
But that's besides the point. He's also a terrible general manager in football. So again, no matter how much of a power trip Mark Murphy wants to go on, I just think John Elway is the worst front office guy in football right now. And I couldn't believe that Flacco trade
John Elway.
When I saw it. John Elway.
I thought you said John Murphy. John Elway, yeah. Maybe, could be. Mark Murphy down the road will be saying the same thing about him. But, yeah, just awful trades, moves. Franchise headed nowhere. They didn't need to make that move. They just signed Case Keenum. Like you said, the $18 million. What are they doing?
I don't know.
What are they doing?
At least the Flacco stuff's not guaranteed.
No, but I don't understand it. I don't get the move. They wasted a fourth-round pick. You already got a quarterback.
All right.
I don't, stupid move.
So if you're just tuning into the show, Chuck and I are making a real conscious effort to not bring Twitter to the airwaves because we know a lot of you guys aren't even on it. And yet we talk about it all the time. But I do keep Twitter and Facebook up during the show to monitor breaking news and to read some of your guys' interaction. We are getting destroyed because we've spent 20 minutes not talking about the Bucks.
Oh, jeez, okay.
We spent 13 and a half hours up to this point out of 13 talking about the Bucks.
But don't go there, River.
Can't do it.
No, don't.
Not letting social media come onto the airwaves.
And, you know, long as you went there for a second, I see some people, a guy tweeted at me that we're not talking enough Marquette either.
Well, we talk plenty Marquette.
We do.
We talk the right amount of Marquette.
We talk the right amount about everybody. What people are talking about.
We are like the perfect blend here on the show. We cover everything. We always pay attention to the most hot topic. The hot topic today is the Bucks. We're going to get back to the Bucks. We've got our weekly guest in Ben Wergel. The Badgers are interesting, so we're going to talk to them next. We're also going to talk about we just had Michael Lombardi on, who's a fantastic guest. We're not going to not talk to him.
No.
By the way, the Packers are still like a thing we cover.
They still are around, even though they're the number three team right now.
Yeah.
They're the team that's got to do some catching up.
Yeah.
But I go back to 2017, April 2017. I don't know who was on that Brewer train first in this city in April of 2017.
Yeah.
Who was talking about the first place Brewers when they were just like 15 games of the season? It was us guys.
We're constantly at the cutting edge is what you're saying.
You got that right, player.
And we put this out. I don't know how many times I have to say this to the contingent of Bucks fans that are like, I don't even know the right word for it. If Chuck and I are just like BSing about women that look like mice, just call in and say something about Giannis. We'll change the conversation. You guys have as much power over this as we do, 799-1250. With all that being said, we're going to talk Badgers next with Ben Wergel.
Our weekly visit with him.
Yeah, and then so set your alarms, Bucks fans. Yeah. 749.
Well, this is...
We'll get back into the Bucks.
Okay, we're talking Badgers here, but this is where Marquette fan says, What about us?
Yeah, well, what about us? We got Marcus Howard.
Yeah, we get Marquette plenty of attention.
Then all of a sudden you've got Brad Beach calling in, the Wave mascot. What are you talking about, the Wave?
They still play.
We'll tell you what's important.
They still play at the Mecca, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is their season going on?
I think so.
Okay. God, the Wave at least at one point were somewhat on the radar. You know, when they played in the Bradley Center.
Yeah, I used to go as a kid. There were 15,000 people that would go.
But that whole league, that's like when they had Brett Favre making an appearance.
No, the playoff games got 15,000 people.
That many?
I went to some.
Okay, well.
Place was packed.
But that league was down to four teams at one point.
And yes, I interned there that league.
They were down to four teams, but they were saying like they won a national championship, but they won a four team league.
Yeah.
But they used to have teams all over. I told you I did the PA for about 15, 20 games in 1990.
Hey, the more we talk about the Wave, the less we're talking about the Bucks. So we will get back into the Bucks in 15 minutes. Ben Wergel, BadgersInsider.com. He joins us next on The Fan. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman. Just got to make sure everyone knows we're going to start talking about the Bucks again in 10 minutes. 9:30, Ben Golliver will join us from the Washington Post. Just wrote a very glowing article about your Milwaukee Bucks, so make sure you're with us then. The content you crave is available. We have it for you, 9:30, Ben Golliver. We talk to maybe our favorite Ben of all the Bens we have on a weekly basis, Ben Wergel. BadgersInsider.com, as the Wisconsin Badgers drop a couple now. Some struggles for Ethan Happ at the free throw line. And the all-important conference regular season championship is probably out of the question. I say that facetiously because I don't think it matters. Ben Wergel joins us. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
Do you need me to talk about the Bucks to keep your viewership happy?
Well, we do.
It is unbelievable.
It's like appointment listening for the Bucks.
We got mobs forming outside the station. And we talk about the Bucks probably, how long is the show? 60, 120, 240 minutes a day we have a show. We talk about the Bucks for probably 232 of them. And the 8 minutes we don't, Ben, we're going to make you the most hated guy in Milwaukee radio right now.
And not only that, because we're not talking about the Bucks or Marquette in this segment.
Yeah.
Because those people are coming at us, too.
Handle. Just tweet at me, the Badger Nation. I'll handle it. I'll throw shade back at you.
All right.
I'll
tell you what. Watching Ethan Happ, and I know this gets redundant talking about this guy, but I feel the best player on the team is going to cost the team in the NCAA tournament with a bad free throw shooting. And, man, some of his footwork, the travel calls, and I don't mean to be ragging on a college guy, but Jesus. That was I'm really disappointed in a couple of areas with his game.
Yeah, it's kind of that tough debate that Greg Gard is in right now with what to do with Ethan Happ, because you look at his senior All-American, and that's probably what he's going to be at the end of the year. Maybe, I don't know if he'll be first team, but he'll definitely be second or third team All-American. He's probably Wisconsin's best offensive hope right now. With his work that he's able to do, he's pretty reliable double-double all season long. He's been able to generate offense when so many other players around him have been very inconsistent. You know, players like Demetri Trice, who hasn't scored in 10 points the last five games, Brad Davison, whose shooting percentage continues to go up and down, up and down. The bench production for Wisconsin is virtually non-existent. You really can't count any production from the bench. Cole Iverson is not a scorer, and Nate Reavers has shown flashes, but still he's just going through his second year and still has a lot of work to do. So I throw all that out to you, and you can see why Greg Gard has been relying so much on Ethan Happ. And part of the problem is this team is too reliant on Ethan Happ, where there are moments where they just feed the ball in the post, and then you have three or four guys stand around and watch Ethan Happ work. And that's not good for your offense. That's part of the reason why you see stagnant offense at critical junctures in games. But the problem is when you have Happ on the floor, you have to deal with his deficiencies. And certainly that's been turnovers, 74 turnovers this year. That's 39 more than any other player. And his free throw shooting. He is now shooting 44.5% from the line this year. And his free throws have cost Wisconsin games at Marquette, against Purdue at home. And certainly this game at Michigan State, where he goes 0 for 6. And none of the free throws look particularly good. And, I mean, some are just, like, flat out horrible. So late in games, when you're in that 1 or 2 point possession, if Gregor takes Ethan Happ off the floor, who does he turn to? There's been moments when Happ's been off the floor, and Wisconsin's offense has functioned at a very high level, you know, against Maryland, against Illinois on the road. But then you're taking your best offensive player out of the equation as well. And when you're going against a team like Michigan State with those big interior post players, you need your most physical weapon, and that's Ethan Happ. So it's a catch-22, and that's part of the reason why you kind of see these moments where it kind of blows up in their face, because Gregor really doesn't have any other good option to turn to in those situations.
Talking with Ben Wargel, BadgersInsider.com. He's on Twitter at the Badger Nation. Watching the Badgers is interesting, because when they win a game, it's like, wow, the potential of this team, they can really figure it out and maybe make a run. And when they lose, even though the last two teams they lost to are pretty good, I mean, I'm fielding texts from people I haven't talked to in a while. I hate this team. They'll never win with Happ. This is a garbage program. So yeah. The question I have for you, and you can comment on that, but the question I have for you is, come tournament time, what's like the farthest they can go? Should we be expecting a deep run if they figure it out, or is this more along the line of what Chuck was saying, that no, something will cost them, it could be Happ at the line, and they'll trip up in round one or even round two?
Well, you look at where this program is right now, and it certainly isn't a better spot than where it was a year ago. I mean, Wisconsin was 15-18. They finished last year. They weren't very competitive for most of the year. They kind of figured it out in late February after they beat number 6 Purdue at home and went on a little bit of a run. They almost knocked off a top-ranked Michigan State team a couple times late. And that's kind of when things started to go in the right direction. This year's team is significantly better, but you can still see there's issues with this team. I mean, they're 2-4 against the top four teams in the Big Ten this year. It's still a young team. People forget that Brad Davison and Nate Reavers are just in their second year. Dimitri Trice didn't play all of last year's Big Ten team. There's certainly been some deficiencies in recruiting that dates back to the Bull Ryan era. We're not that far removed from the Bull Ryan era. And Greg Gard is still trying to get his footing under him in recruiting. Recruiting hasn't been that great the last couple of years. They haven't really landed any stud prospects, and the prospects they have landed, as of late, hasn't played yet. We're still kind of waiting to see the returns on those. But early returns on, like, Reavers and Davison is very good. Dimitri Trice, I think, can develop into a good player. Aleem Ford is kind of the shell of himself after his knee injury. So it's still a work in progress. I don't really agree with people saying that this is a program that's kind of headed down the toilet, so to speak. I think it's a program that's still a little bit in a transition from what Wisconsin had a couple years ago when you had so much veteran leadership. You're still trying to replace guys like Koenig and Hayes and Showalter, and it's taking longer because of all the injuries last year and some of the youth that had to play and some of the lack of success in previous recruiting classes. You get to this year with this team, they are an NCAA tournament team. They will make the tournament barring something catastrophic down the stretch, which I really don't see happening. What can this team do in March? It depends if they can get other people to help Ethan Happ. Ethan Happ has had to do it all himself. I mean, like I said, Dimitri Trice, 1-for-6, last 5 games, he's like 13-for-39. Brad Davison, 2-of-12 at Minnesota, 4-of-8 at Michigan, and 3-for-12 on Tuesday. Reverend Pritzel gets 7 points in the first half, doesn't attempt a shot in the second half. They just need more consistent play, and then you potentially can make a run in March. But I think realistically, this team is good for 1 win in the tournament, maybe 2 to get to the Sweet 16. Right now, I have a hard time seeing them go any farther than that, though, just because they're so reliant on one player. In the month of March, when every team in that tournament's good, you're going to find a team that's going to be good enough to shut down Ethan Happ and make other players beat him, and right now that's not a recipe for success for Wisconsin.
Yeah, Benji, though, the bar has been set so high with Wisconsin, what Bo did in 2014 and 2015, and then, you know, Gard made that run, and then he got picked off by Florida, which would have got him to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
But losing at Madison Square Garden. Do you think this program is headed back in that direction? I mean, because when you're talking maybe first or second round, the expectations are set a little higher for that.
Yeah, I don't get all the vile and hatred towards Greg Gard. I think that he's a good young coach who's been a longtime assistant, and he's developed a really good program. He took over a really good program. And the things that he's been able to do in his short tenure are incredibly impressive. I mean, you know, 40 Big Ten wins in 66 games. That's the third fastest among active Big Ten coaches behind Izzo and Turgeon. He's knocked off a slew of top 10 teams. He's made the tournament 3 out of 4 years, a couple Sweet 16s. He's done some very good things, but still there's this anger towards him that he's not Bull Ryan. And, you know, people forget that Bull Ryan had some lean years too, a lot of lean years, and that Bo's teams went through these losing streaks. I think we've talked about this previously. Bo's first Final Four year, they went through a stretch of Big Ten games where they just looked terrible, and they figured it out. Now, I'm not saying this is a Final Four team. I'm just saying that teams go through these type of lulls for the most part, with a couple of exceptions, obviously. The big key for me with Greg that I still am kind of waiting on is on the recruiting trail. Can Wisconsin land a good recruiting class? Last year they landed one player from Minnesota, Tyler Wall. A good player. I don't think you can classify him as a great player. A typical Wisconsin player. Good player, bring him in, develop him, turns into hopefully a really good player down the road. You know, 2 years ago, the recruiting class was kind of, you know, it was just okay. You know, a couple post players that need some time to develop. Wisconsin needs to land like a Jalen Johnson, Patrick Baldwin, you know, those top-tier players in-state that can come in and really impact your program. And, you know, odds are they're not going to land either of those guys. Okay, then what can you find, what can you bring in to continue this run of success and to build this run of success? I think the jury is still out there for a lot of people. That's a lot of people's main complaint. Where's the talent? Why can't this staff build on those final 4 years and bring in some elite prospects? Why can't guard recruit better? He's, you know, things like that that I get all the time. And my answer is, well, just wait and see what Nate Reavers develops into, Brad Davison, Demetri Trice, and let's see what guard brings down the recruiting for the next couple of years, how those players bring in. He's not going anywhere. I don't think this program is going to be stuck in neutral here. I think that they took a big step backwards last year. They've taken a nice step forward this year. Let's see what they do next year without Hap. Because like I said, even though Hap's going to be gone, there's been times this year when Hap's not on the floor and the offense really hums and really does some good things. So I think they'll be fine next year. And maybe this staff and this program can continue taking these steps forward to get back to competing for Big Ten and national titles.
Ben Wergel at the Badger Nation on Twitter, badgersinsider.com. Benny, we appreciate it. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, get back to your Bucks coverage. Little pitchforks are getting a little higher in the sky.
Yeah, we're on it. That's next. The Badger Nation, if you want to yell at Ben for wasting the last 10 minutes of our show. Thanks, Ben.
See you guys.
Ben Wergel joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019? Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common sense lending to your community since 1935. Chuck is not going to say how good Giannis is. I am not about to say how good Giannis is. You're going to hear Giannis say how good Giannis is, and I love the attitude because he's 100% correct. We will hear from the Greek Freak next on The Fan. It's tax time. Hyundai West. Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. If you're listening live, just heard a promo for Mike McGivern's show on Saturday. That's my favorite Varsity Blitz show of the year because they seed the tournament and then he calls the coaches after they get out of their seating meetings and some are so mad about where they're seated and it's so fresh that they just complain to McGivern on the show. Yeah. So that's Saturday on The Fan.
I like to be a fly in the wall in some of those meetings because there's guys arguing. Yeah. Some guys are resigned to the fact if they're 0-17 at that point that they're having the last seed and they get it.
Yeah. But we're playing really well as of late. Yeah. Give us the 7th seed, not the 8.
Yeah. No.
So that's always a good show. That's at 10 o'clock Saturday's Varsity Blitz here on The Fan. Speaking of seeding, right now the Bucks have the number 1 seed in the East. They got the best record in all of basketball. And I think, Chuck, they have the best player in all of basketball. And I think the best player in all of basketball thinks that as well. So he was asked about Thaddeus Young, who was defending him last night in the Bucks win over the Pacers. And he talked about Thaddeus Young, but then he went a little further and basically said, nobody can stop me. And I love the weight that he put behind that. This is Giannis last night after the game.
He's a great guy, first of all. Amazing player, amazing teammate, plays hard. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to sound arrogant and cocky because that's not who I am, but I don't think there's one guy that can stop me. You know, it's got to be the whole team effort. You know, they got to low, they got to double team me. They got, when I get to the paint, three guys, you know, swarm at me. That's the only way. They got to all work together to stop me from making plays, not getting points, from making plays. And but he's a great defensive guy, defender, and I love playing against him.
I love that.
Yeah, because he feels great about himself, and he should. And I love. Did you see the video that the Bucks will sometimes on their Twitter account will put a like they'll interview a player as they're walking out towards the bus. They're walking out of the locker room and they're walking out of the stadium and they're walking, or the arena, they're walking toward the bus. And they did one with Giannis last night, and he was talking about how proud he was of his teammates and his team and what they're going to have to do in the All-Star break, get some rest. He's not going to get any rest. Yeah, he said, well, we need to rest and get our legs under us and all that. And unfortunately, he and Chris Middleton aren't going to be able to do that.
Well, they've got the All-Star game and the All-Star weekend festivities, but he is going to find some downtime to watch some MTV, Giannis, after the game as well.
I'm asleep all day. I'm asleep tonight. I'm asleep all day tomorrow. Wake up, get some breakfast, shower, and lay on the couch, watch some MTV, like some drama shows. You know, what are they called? Kardashians, Sex on the Beach, Are You the One, XXX Challenge, stuff like that. I like it. I love drama. And then the next day I'm asleep again. I'm wake up, get some breakfast, not do nothing, get a haircut, look nice, look handsome, get ready for the All-Star break. Spend some time with my brother, go watch my brother play, and then I'm gonna go Saturday to support Chris. Then I'm gonna go play in the Sunday game. That's it. I'm just gonna rest.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's what he needs to do. Yeah, yeah.
Little sex on the beach.
And if he wants any drama, all he's got to do is tune into us every day from 6 until 10. There's plenty of it.
Well, it sounds like he's sleeping right now, but he can grab the podcast later on the radio.com app. And what he'll hear, Chuck, is what he's been hearing every day this week and every day this month and every day since this season started. Chuck Bucks talk.
Yeah. One thing about that comment he just made, one more. Watching MTV, have they brought music videos back to MTV?
Oh, God.
Because that sounds like me when I was like 19, when MTV was great.
What's older, MTV or people making a joke about MTV not playing videos
anymore? I don't even think of MTV anymore. But I'm asking you seriously, is there such thing as videos anymore?
Yeah, they're big on the internet now.
But they don't put them on MTV? They just have the game shows and the...
I mean, they might show them overnight.
Okay.
But, like, I think TRL came back for a while. That might be dead. Total Request
Live. How
about
Get Slimed? Is that still on?
Get Slimed, I think that was on Nickelodeon.
Oh.
I think that was called Double Dare.
It was Double Dare.
Yeah. All right. You're confusing your Viacom networks.
Okay.
Is what you're doing.
All right. Well, I mean, I put on MTV. Is Downtown Julie Brown on there yet?
She is on the 80s Sirius XM channel.
Oh, that's how far removed she is. Okay.
They brought a lot of those people on the 80s Sirius XM channel. Okay. So, yeah, you can grab her. Go grab her if you want. We're going to be talking Bucks the next little while here.
I can stand her anyway.
As we want to see what this team needs to do in the second half for you to get to at least where I am. I think this team's going to the finals. Frames, are you there yet?
You know what?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.